Phil Hendry.
Good evening. Welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's a news talk and, well, it's not any of those. It's just a talk show. It's just a talk show, like any talk show. And we're here and we're talking. And we welcome you to listen in. And, yeah, a lot of times if you watch us, for instance, on Phil TV, and you're welcome to do that. Phil TV is at philhenryshow.com. You have to have a subscription, a BSP, to watch Phil TV. And I've heard it said, so I'm going to be watching you talking, right? So, yeah, this is going to be watching us performing as well. And you know, people will say, well, what is that? You know, so who cares? I said, I don't know, but I know that Gene Scott made a hell of a lot of money just sitting on his ass in a chair in front of a blackboard doing that. And people will say, who? And I'll say, it doesn't matter. He made a lot of money.
Well, Gene Scott was taking donations. Is that...
I'm not taking donations. We provide a subscription service. So maybe it's a little bit different.
Yeah, people didn't pay on a subscription could still watch Gene Scott.
How do you know about Gene Scott, by the way?
You always talk about Gene Scott.
Gene Scott was a guy that was a preacher on television. Many of you may know, many of you may not. I don't even want to call him a preacher because he sat in a chair, he smoked cigars. Occasionally he did have some chick that looked like she was right off the set of The Price is Right walking behind him. And am I right or am I wrong about that? It just seems to me that Gene Scott every now and again had like some Price is Right model walking around, you know, showing things like here is a Bible. And he would sit there and smoke these big, fat stogies. And he had a blackboard behind him, and he would write down things. And now, in the book of Leviticus, you can see, and he would write stuff. And then he'd sit back down in his chair.
People love to watch him. I know Frank liked to watch him because Frank thought it was very entertaining.
Well, it was entertaining to a point, but then it got bizarre. He would start to sing. But then who am I to judge? Like I'm saying, I'm not judging the guy. I'm saying, well, here's my opinion of Gene Scott, good, bad, or indifferent. It may be any of those, but the fact is he was popular enough whereby he bought a block of time on local, you know, Christian or bought a block of time during time periods where they had Christian programming or religious programming, and generally Sunday morning, something like that. There was also a channel here in California, and as there are in many locations, that was a 24/7 religious programming, and you would see Scott, you saw TBN, all that stuff. But Gene Scott was way out there, man. He sat there in that chair, puffing on his cigar, talking about this, that, or something else. I don't even, to this day, I don't know what his philosophy of life was, because I would just look at this cat. I couldn't listen to more than 5 minutes of it, and I didn't know what he was talking about. I thought he was like probably a typical right-wing preacher, but then there was a lot of stuff about him that was different.
Well, but the point is, you say he made money, and people love to give him money, but he was saying something of substance, Phil. He was talking about, why are we talking about this, by the way? I want to get into what Glenn Beck is saying.
Well, speaking of Gene Scott, you know.
But you think that Glenn Beck has a, like, he thinks he's Jesus or something?
No, I didn't say that at all, did I?
No, but you're intimating that he's nuts. Okay, there we go. You're intimating he's nuts.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that, like Gene Scott, Glenn has a message, and he imparts that message one-on-one to the audience without any frills or you know, too many bells and whistles. And like Gene Scott, you know, he has a loyal following. And so in my smaller way, I'm nowhere near as big as Glenn or Gene Scott, but in my own small, little, tiny way, people stare at me running my yap, see?
What's that behind you tonight?
What's that behind? I already told you what that is.
Well, maybe the audience wants to know.
Well, we're looking at... the audience tonight is both our radio and our Phil TV audience, but if you're watching Phil TV, that's Hollywood Boulevard. That is going right by the Kodak Theater. You can also see the Guitar Center there. And I think there's a couple of clubs, some theaters there. That's the Promenade. That is the Hollywood Promenade, the Promenade. Right, Margaret?
No, it's just the Promenade. Good God.
Well, you're the one that's always with the, French.
Yeah, you always talk about a French. Now a guy talks French, you don't like it.
Do you have to yell everything? The guy talk about French?
Take it easy, Margaret. You know, the kid's making a good point. You're always talking with the French accent, so I try to lay it on you.
Well, you don't do it very well, Phil. You sound as if you lost part of your tongue.
in a lion taming accident, maybe?
You said it, not me.
Nonetheless, that's what we're looking at. Now, going to our very first story of the evening, it is the Glenn Beck prediction. Now, remember he said, and I think we mentioned this, he said that over the weekend he said he's going to give the federal government till Monday to come clean on the Boston bombing, or he was going to rip the lid off this sucker. He was going to tear the roof off the mother sucker. Glenn Beck says the Boston bombing investigation is a cover-up conspiracy that yesterday he revealed the facts that supposedly support his case. A cover-up con- Now, think about this, folks. This is a conspiracy theorist's wet dream. Glenn Beck, as close to a mainstream commentator as the conspiracy theorists could possibly get. I mean, this guy he's the real deal. Alex Jones is Gollum compared to Glenn Beck. Alex Jones lives under a bridge compared to Glenn Beck, okay? So if you got Alex Jones, you think that guy's some kind of a spokesperson. I bet you Alex Jones is pissed off today because Glenn Beck is stealing the thunder.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point, man. I mean, if I was Alex Jones, I'd be mad.
What? What did you say?
He said if he's Alex Jones, he'd be really upset.
No, you said if I'm
I understood him, but understood him.
Yeah, don't you let you can't speak black?
Excuse me, but that's not even funny.
All right, hold on. Glenn Beck says the Boston bombing investigation's a cover-up. As previously reported by the Inquisiteur, Glenn Beck is alleging a cover-up and conspiracy in the Boston bombing investigation of the case of the Saudi national named Abdul Rahman Ali Arabiya Dugulugu. This is the Saudi that they detained. Was supposedly in violation of Section 212(3)(b) of the Immigration and Nationality Act, citing security and related grounds and terrorist activities. This was the Saudi that was in custody for a brief time shortly after the bombing. And as we said, what's kind of interesting is ever since 9/11, the profile of a terrorist, a, shall we say, jihadist, an Islamist terrorist, is a male ages between the ages of 19 and 33 in the country on a student visa from a terror sponsoring country. Now, Saudi Arabia may not be, quote, a terror sponsoring country, but they've kind of slipped into that category by default because the 9/11 bombers, many of them came from, or the 9/11 terrorists, I should say, came from that country. And sure enough, if you want to, yeah, get technical when it comes to that profile. These two guys, they fit into it like, oh, baby. They had first entered the country, I think, on student visas. Now, one of them was a citizen, but the Saudi, this guy that that Glenn Beck is talking about, this guy, he lines up perfectly. I think he was in the country on a student visa. He is between the ages of 19 and 33. Saudi Arabia may not, as I say, be a terror sponsoring country, but it is now, you know, a hotbed because of 9/11. The Saudi national was cleared of involvement in the bombings, but it was also discovered that his visa to stay in the U.S. had expired, and ICE may be readying to deport him on those grounds. Glenn Beck isn't the only one watching this part of the Boston bombing investigation closely. Congressman Jeff Duncan, Republican of South Carolina, expressed concerns the Saudi national was being deported due to national security concerns. Duncan says, I'm not saying it's related to Boston, but he is being deported. Well, he's being deported because his student visa expired. And this is part of the post-9/11 world we live in. That's the law. Do you understand? Yes, he's being deported. Why don't you read the law there, Mr. Duncan? The law says your ass gets deported. You run afoul of the law. You're not an American citizen. You've run afoul of your the restrictions and strictures and so forth and so on, having to do with visa, passport, and, you know, the Statue of Liberty and the, you know, Pledge of Allegiance. Your ass gets put on the next banana boat back to wherever the hell you came from.
Banana boat.
Take it easy. So it isn't some big weird thing, man. The guy got deported because, oh, isn't that interesting? So you were here and this and that. Yes, sir. Well, I'm sorry, but your ass is gone. Banana boat 3. Take your suitcase. Go ahead. There you go. Banana boat 3. Just get in line there just like you used to for Pirates of the Caribbean.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yay!
Cut. All right, we'll be back with more of this scintillating, fantastically interesting, if you didn't get out of the third grade, story when we come back. the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth
you just
is our
called
bitch.
Glenn Beck a third.
The Phil Hendry Show.
No, I didn't. Glenn's a showman, man. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. That was on our screen here on Phil TV. That was Glenn Beck, and that is a picture of Glenn. And it is a picture of him accompanying an article about the statements he's made concerning the Boston bombing, and that this Saudi national that we all knew was in custody there early on, or was being looked at, or was being questioned, or was, you know, sitting on his ass on a stool somewhere while a bunch of guys in suits and earpieces were talking to him, whatever you want to call it. Yes, he was Saudi Arabian. Yes, he was here on a student visa. Yes, that student visa had expired. One of the things, as I mentioned, to keep in mind is that the prime profile since 9/11 of a suspect or of a possible terrorist. And they don't want to profile all Arab people. And this is one of the things that you can't get through to a lot of folks. Either you got on one side the idiots that think we're profiling everybody, or you got on the other side Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. Where is the love, baby? You know?
Yes, do you remember the song, Where is the Love That You Gave to Me?
Oh, come on.
Excuse me, if I could reach across you.
Margaret, you can't solve your problems with violence.
Oh, get a load of the beatnik. Wow.
Well, you're wanting to reach across and smack him.
Yeah, every time I do something wrong, all you ever want to do...
You're the one person that I think it would do some good with. You're the one person that if I just balled up a fist...
All right, so that's nice.
What I'm saying is that was a beautiful song by What's-Her-Face, and she was lovely. I forget her name.
Roberta Flack.
Who?
Roberta Flack. Where is the love...
Well, excuse me, Phil, but you're not doing that very well.
No, Miss Henry's right. It's Roberta Flack.
Roberta Flack. Who's that?
Roberta. Roberta Flack.
I never heard of her.
Are you kidding? She was one of the top singers of the 70s. She had hit record after hit record.
I gotta agree, Miss Gray. I ain't never heard of her at all.
Who cares what you've heard of? Jesus, bud. The only guy you've ever heard of is Dwight Yoakam, Josh Turner... Who I think you know...
Yeah, I think you got the hots for him.
Shut up!
Anyway. So, what's your point?
Nothing. Go ahead. Read your little story. Read your Glenn Beck fantasy.
Do you agree with him?
I think he may have a point. For the first time in his poor, muddled life, I think Glenn Beck may have a point. It's just too packed. There's too many answers.
Yeah, we wouldn't want that now, would we?
Phil, are you listening to what I... It's just falling together too easy.
Yeah, we can't do that. We can't have things fall together too easy. We got to have things that take time. We got to have things that don't add up. Boy, if we think about it long enough and hard enough, we may put this guy on a banana boat and send his ass back to Chechnya or wherever the hell they're from. And he won't see one day of jail time. Because already I hear that there's some sympathy building. I mean, it's not a real big wave, but can you get a load of this, folks? There's people who have sympathy for this Jokar dude. You know, what you've done doesn't mean, you know, that doesn't make up who you are. What is that supposed to mean?
Well, I don't have sympathy for him so much as I'd like to know who the real person was.
They got him. They got him and they got his brother. They got an admission out of him, which I know they probably beat it out of him, and it's probably a lie, and it's probably coerced, and the real guy's going to be hidden because the government doesn't want anybody to know because Glenn Beck's got a problem with Barack Obama, and that's where that's at. Let me just read to you this story here, and you tell me. There isn't anything here that Mr. Beck offers any, and I say this with all due respect, Glenn, because I know Mr. Beck, I knew him when I had more money than him. That's how long I've known him. But I got to tell you, Glenn, you don't offer anything here other than just statements. You don't offer anything but statements. He says, this Saudi national was supposedly in violation of 212.3b of the Immigration and Nationality Act, citing security and related grounds and terrorist activities. That's not true. The Saudi national was cleared of involvement in the bombings, but it was discovered that his visa was expired. And yes, they probably will deport him because that's what happens when you break the law in the United States of America and you've got no legal grounds to be here and they find your ass and you happen to be involved in, you know, you happen to be in fitting the profile, if you will, of an area of concern for the United States government. They're gonna deport your ass. This guy has not been convicted of a crime. He hasn't been even, there's no evidence connecting him to this. It's a normal course of, it's normal procedure, what I'm trying to tell you.
You're not doing very well. You're going,
yeah, you're all, you know, stumbling and stuff.
Is that it? Is that the only argument you can make?
Is that the only argument? Phil, if you're so sure of yourself, why are you going, it's another guy, and the guy, it's creeping me out. It's weirding me out. It's almost as if you need some kind of an antipsychotic. You know, you go, that.
No, I've heard my brother talks like that, and he makes a lot of sense.
Oh, well, I'll bet he makes a lot of sense to you.
What's that supposed to mean?
Hold on. So Glenn Beck wasn't the only one watching this. It was a congressman named Jeff Duncan who expressed concerns the Saudi national is being deported due to the national security concerns. Duncan says, I'm not saying it's related to Boston, but he is being deported. Yeah, he's being deported because of the visa situation. I don't even think he was technically a person of interest, said Janet Napolitano. He wasn't even a suspect. That was a wash. I'm not aware of any proceeding there. I will clarify for you. But I think this is an example of why it's so important to let law enforcement do their job. Well, that ain't going to happen here because Glenn Beck's on the case. He claims his Boston bombing investigation conspiracy will cause some of his sources to be under threat of a 20-year prison term. So that will explain why nobody is coming forward and agreeing with Glenn because they're under the threat of a 20-year prison term. We don't know at this point how the Saudi national Abdul whatever the hell was involved. Of course you don't know. Of course you don't know. You don't know how he was involved. But I do know he was involved in the Boston bombing. Okay, where's your evidence? Where's your evidence, man? Beck says the Saudi national was once flagged on a terror watch list, but was granted a U.S. student visa anyway, which means as he was coming in, his name popped up, and they said, let's go and talk to you, because you're on a... It's like when your wife, my ex-wife, Maria, her last name was Sanchez. How many times do you think she got pulled out of line? That's a terror watch list. She got pulled out of line for the first probably three or four trips we took, a couple overseas, domestically, pulled out of line all the time. Why? Because of her last name, Sanchez. He claims the Saudi national's deportation under Section 212 indicates proven terrorist activity. No, it does not. You can't cite that. That proves that at all, Glenn. No, it does not. Says it's very difficult to charge someone with this. If it's very difficult to charge someone with it, then how does it... Me, what? It has to be almost certain, and of course it isn't, except in your own hallucination.
That is a terrible thing to say about a former colleague.
I'm not saying literally.
You're saying he's probably got DTs on account he drank one time.
Yeah, Glenn Beck, he drank. You think he's back on?
I'm not going to say that. You know what? That would be easy to say, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be easy to say that Glenn Beck's back drinking again? You could say that, and you could probably get a few people to believe it. You could really malign a man unfairly. I'm not going to go there. I think he's, you know, this is Glenn's trip, man. It's his act. The only problem is, act or no act, it's irresponsible. It's just irresponsible. It's not, I don't think it's, you know.
Well, Phil, you've been on the air talking about how goblins get sucked into jet engines.
Only a jackball would believe something like that. This is the kind of thing whereby only jackballs would believe this, but there are more jackballs that would believe this than would believe that a goblin gets sucked into a jet engine.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Glenn Beck claims President Barack Obama reportedly had a meeting, here we go, with Saudi Foreign Minister Saud and Saudi Ambassador Adel Ad-Jubeer, which led to the Saudi national's fate being changed. Of course. We've got to get Obama involved in this. Obama had this meeting, and suddenly, you know... What does that mean? Send him back to Saudi Arabia? Does it mean that Obama changed somebody's mind? In any event, Beck has got everybody. He's got all the key players lined up in this. He's got John Kerry. He's got Obama. He's got Janet Napolitano. He's got all the boogeymen that the conservatives all love to pile on. And they're all responsible for covering up this Abdul Saeed, whatever the hell this guy's name is. They're all responsible for making sure that that guy doesn't get charged with the Boston bombing, that these hapless individuals, the one of whom is alive, the other is dead, they get charged with it. A couple of Chechnyans by way of the Caucasus Mountains, by way of Taurus Bulba and Alibaba, and the 40 Thieves. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Oh, yeah.
What's Taurus Bulba?
Phil Hendry. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hello, Phil Hendry here. Sorry, just lost camera one. Welcome back to the show, 877-876. Phil, take a very quick phone call here, and then I do want to move on to a couple of stories, one of which is having to do with the Osbournes, and another, a Maryland group of Maryland corrections officers aiding in a gang drug scheme. Darren, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil. Enjoying your program.
Thank you.
Hey, Glenn Beck has been kind of on the fringe. I think anybody would say that he's been on the fringe for a long time. Would you agree with that?
I don't know if he's on the fringe. I think he's he had some mainstream, big mainstream success when he was at Fox.
Yeah, but the opinions and the attitudes that he expresses, I think, are on the fringe. That's just me, maybe. And you alluded to it a minute ago when you said, well, how would it be if I said that Glenn Beck is drinking again? And I'm going to say this. I think he is. I think there's something wrong with him. I think there's got to be something wrong with him to say that this is suddenly no longer an obvious open and shut case, and they do happen. You do occasionally identify the perpetrators of these horrendous acts, and they do eventually come to justice, even in this case, if one of them was killed. But Glenn Beck, to say that these two guys had nothing to do with it, and instead it's this Saudi that the police themselves have said is clear, I don't know if he is drinking or what his problem is, but that's what I wanted to ask you.
I'm not going to comment on that.
Well, I will comment on... Your name is Darren?
Yes, ma'am.
Darren, I think what he has here is something that is very interesting. I think it needs to be pursued.
So you believe this?
I didn't say I believe it. Excuse me. I didn't say I believe it.
That belch is...
All right, hold on for just a minute.
No, that's all right. I got it.
Okay, he hung up.
I don't care.
All right, well, that was just the guy who was going to talk to you, but as soon as you belched, he hung up.
I don't care.
Go ahead.
Well, now there's no point in... He hung up. So, sir, wherever you are, you've got no courage at all. Because I belched, you hung up? Woo!
Well, yeah, don't we gotta stay on a phone?
Yeah, it's kind of rude.
Well, you know something? I've given dinner parties in 5 separate decades. I've had kings, I've had queens, I've had every kind of person in my home... What are you looking at?
I'm just... What do you mean, kings and queens?
That's right. Kings and queens, royalty in my home.
All right, I didn't know that.
So don't tell me what's polite and what isn't polite. And again, I'm not going to have my esophagus blown in half.
Margaret, I got to tell you, you must have belches that are the most powerful on record.
Can we change the subject, please? I was talking about Glenn Beck when this caller decided he was going to hang up because his girlish feelings got hurt. Glenn Beck may be onto something, and if he's onto something, Margaret Gray is going to be right there to report the story. I'm not letting this one get away.
Yeah, but he...
I'm not letting this one get away, Mumbles.
Well...
Don't call him Mumbles.
What do you want me to call him? Do you want me to call him William F. Buckley?
Well, I think that... Like that man said, he might be drinking.
Who, that man might be drinking?
No, that guy said that Glenn may be. I don't think Glenn's drinking. I just think that it's. Here's what I think.
Oh, God.
Well, excuse me. We just heard your theory. Here's what I think, okay?
Yes, I'm listening, Daddy.
Here's what I think. I think that Glenn, the website that he operates, The Blaze, and I just made the comment to Dan. I said, well, you know Glenn's website, The Blaze, and Dan says, who? What? I said, The Blaze. You certainly have heard of The Blaze. I mean, it was what Glenn left Fox and set up The Blaze. I've never heard of it before. He said, I've never heard of it until now. And I said, well, there you go. I think business is so, it's not bad, but I think he needs something to pop, man. You know, I think he needs something to pop. And look, I know Glenn. I know him from the days at Premier. I know this guy because he used to watch me do my radio show. He used to watch all of the satire. I mean, come on, people. He used to stand there in the studio and watch as we created out of whole cloth these scenarios and had people call in on them. And he would watch this, and then he leaves the studio, right? Now, do you think it's a coincidence?
Now, this is a conspiracy. Now, this is a conspiracy theory.
A what? A conspiracy theory? Oh, my God. I've got to get up and have a bowel movement after that.
Wait a minute.
Don't you laugh at me.
Wait a minute. What do you think about what I'm saying, though?
I think there's merit to it, but I've got to go to the toilet.
You're talking about a conspiracy theory of Glenn Beck, and you did it?
I'm not saying I did it. I said I know Glenn because he used to admire that kind of theater. He used to watch me do it. What was one of the big things he first did when he started National Radio? He did War of the Worlds, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he's got people thinking serious.
This is the difference is between a Glenn Beck and a Jerry Springer and a Phil Henry is I let people know I'm kidding. With Glenn and Jerry and those guys, they want you to think they're serious to the grave, man. To the grave. They don't ever want anybody to know that they're kidding around or that they don't mean it. They don't want anybody to ever know that what it is essentially a kind of theater, Andy Kaufman-esque, if you want, that nobody ever is let in on the joke. No one has ever let in on the fact that it's just bullcrap, man. Now, what I was going to say is The Blaze is Glenn's current business interest, and with the exception of advertising that he does, I haven't heard them break one story. Now, they're supposedly a news site. I haven't heard about those guys breaking one story, not one. I'm sure they're doing great business. In fact, I know they are. They got fantastic subscription rates. They've got a great subscription base, and they're doing well, but it's not like they're making news. Now, all of a sudden, what do you got here? Well, the periodical, the news site that I was reading, is linking to, guess what? The Blaze. They link to the story on Glenn's homepage. They link to the story on his website. Saudi national and former person of interest allegedly speaks. Officials apologized to me and promised me special health care. And there's a picture of him sitting in his hotel room, sitting in his hospital room with a big, fat, crap-eating grin on his face, wearing his green smock, and looking like he just won a car on Wheel of Fortune. So,
well, not really. I'd never seen anybody with a robe.
Did they see a guy win a car on Wheel of Fortune, a green robe? Will you guys give me a break? You know what I'm talking about. So I think that there's a little bit of that and a little bit of this. And again, I will emphasize, for those of you that just don't get it, man, I mean, way back when, I remember Glenn was a guy who was fascinated with the kind of radio theater that we were doing, which was essentially standing talk radio on its head and just saying, oh, it's a big load. And look at all of these people calling in and think it's real. Okay? That was part of the fun. And he liked that. He thought it was cool. He watched it happen. He wanted to do it. Are you kidding me, man? That cat was doing character voices on his show. So all of a sudden now I'm supposed to believe that the dude is laying out the serious. I know it's going to piss people off. I know when I get off the air tonight, there's going to be tweets and there's going to be emails from people telling me what a big fat loser I am and get off of Glenn's back and you'll never be half the man he is. Bah, bah, bah. I get it, man. But the fact is, I know what I know.
I'm back now. What did he say?
You just got done saying that Glenn Beck is, we used to like theater.
Yes, yes, but get to the point.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I'm here, okay? You want to ask me?
Well, Phil, I wanted to just get a recap.
Here's your recap. Be happy with this. Glenn has always been a fan of radio theater, and he's always been a fan of creating out of whole cloth these scenarios. And I think what he did was he took the kind of satire that we do, and maybe that others do, and he decided, he made one key change. He decided not for it to be obvious as entertainment. He decided to make it a part of a news narrative. He decided to just sort of, for the furtherance of the truth that he believes in, okay? For the furtherance of the truth that Glenn believes in, he has decided to create these myths, to create these mythical narratives, to create these fables, because after all, isn't that what religion does? Isn't that what makes a legend? You know, not all the things that come down to us from antiquity are true. We have a legend. We have snippets of this might have happened, and maybe that happened. We have the story of Jesus. We have a lot of stuff, man. Some of it's true, some of it isn't. We don't know which, but it all kind of makes sense in the modern, in how we interpret it. And so I think in Glenn's mind, he believes that that kind of fable creation, that kind of myth creation, that's all cool if it furthers the truth. And in his brain, the truth is Obama's a crap president, is going to lead the country into the toilet, and he must be stopped.
Well, that is a very serious charge. That's a very serious charge.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Because you can put it under the umbrella of entertainment.
Yeah, that's right. You just tell when a guy says, you're trying to ruin America, and they'll say, oh, well, I'm just being entertainment.
Yeah, that's true, man. I heard a lot of guys do that.
See?
What? Are you trying to tell me that people are out there lying through their teeth, lying like the crawling dogs they are, because they want to have a successful radio show and the future of the country be damned?
Yes. Yes, I am. But although I will say this, I don't believe that that's why Glenn is creating. I don't think in his mind he's lying. In his mind, he's myth-building. He's fable-building. He's creating, as I say, this fantasy that serves the greater good and the greater truth. The greater good and the greater truth is that America is better off with another president who's more conservative. America's better off with conservative presidents. America's better off with small government guys. America's better off with a conservative point of view. America, when we have liberals, they're socialists, it's bad, it's crap, and anything that gets rid of them is good. You know, it's like the end justifying the means.
The what?
The ends justifying the means.
Well, you said end.
Yeah.
What are you agreeing with? You don't even know what she's talking about.
But you said end.
What about it?
That'd probably sound a little obscene.
Yes, when you say end, and then you're not going to like this, but you glanced at my...
Boy, you know what? You need a psychiatrist. You need a psychiatrist more than Glenn Beck.
No, excuse me. No, I do not.
Yes, you do. And also, I think you need to be breathalyzed.
How dare you?
We'll be right back. Get a breathalyzer in here. Call the CHP. I want to have Margaret blow into something.
Well, I got to... Well, never mind.
Oh, that's funny.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Watch
Truth
that, Robert, okay?
He's our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I got something you can blow into. Ow! You hit me.
Yes.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right. Welcome. Welcome, 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 welcome. Phil Hendry Show, online at philhendryshow.com. Episode 151 of the Classic Podcast has dropped. It's dropped at our website, philhendryshow.com. Episode 151 is Herb Sewell. It's from our Classic archives, and it's Herb Sewell talking with me and you about Michael Jackson. When Michael Jackson was alive, and he was essentially he was speaking up for Michael Jackson, saying, whatever this guy has done, it can't be that bad. Nobody could be as bad as me, said Herb. Nobody could be as bad as me or Walter Belhaven. So check it out, episode 151 of the Classic Phil Hendry Podcast. And I haven't even told Dan this. I did tell my pre-show audience this, and I'm telling you guys, my radio audience, and Dan, I guess I'm telling you. Well, maybe I should tell you before I tell them. I'll tell Dan before I tell them.
What?
What I already told you guys.
Oh, you taking next week off?
Will you shut up, man? I said I was going to tell him myself.
What, are you nuts, man? You said you're going to tell him.
Yeah, I would tell him, not you.
I didn't. I told you.
He already knows, you moron. God, I'm going to...
Hold on, watch it. Well, I guess now you know, Dan. Sorry. taking next week off. And however, the classic podcast will continue to drop, and we will do a live report. That's right. Or at least a semblance of a podcast, a live report from the road for you on our website. So if you don't have a BSP, get one, because you, with the BSP, you are clued in, you're wired in, you're beautiful. You're just, everybody follows you around and wants to buy you drinks. Now, Vanilla Ice, Reverend Run of Run DMC, both of these gentlemen to star in a pair of new reservations, new renovation series on DIY Network. The DIY Television Network is providing a comfortable home for rappers turned renovators. Vanilla Ice Goes Amish will debut on the network this year. Is that the one that you saw, Dan? Dan said he saw a...
I saw Vanilla Ice in Miami buying a pair of shoes. What'd you say, Dan? I saw Vanilla Ice buying a pair of shoes and some underwear.
Big deal!
Oh, my God. Why am I not allowed to strike him?
Take it easy, bud. Shut up.
I'm buying a bumperware.
No, I didn't see him buying bumperware. It was underwear.
I said underwear.
No, you didn't. You said bumperware, something like that. Nonetheless, we know what you meant. So you saw, so what?
Did any of you see Vanilla Ice anywhere?
Well, no.
All right, Robert?
No, I don't, I mean...
Okay, I did. I saw him buying underwear, socks, and whatever comes in a box.
That'd be a jockstrap.
How dare you?
Margaret, you're the one that's bringing up all this intimate stuff. You saw Vanilla Ice buying all this stuff.
Well, no, I didn't see him. I saw his man or whoever they have.
His man?
Yeah, they probably got a guy going to the store about underwear.
Well, I don't know about that, but I mean, there was someone there buying it. He had a leather coat and shades, you know.
Okay. How do you know he worked for Vanilla Ice?
Because it was Miami, because he looked... The man inside the limousine was white.
Okay, there's a lot of white guys in Miami.
All of them with black guys with black jackets working for them? I don't think so.
Margaret, you're...
It was Vanilla Ice. Live in it, son. Live in it. Thank you.
All right, it was Vanilla Ice. He was buying underwear and socks. Well, guess what? Now he's going to have to put his underwear on and his socks because he's going to be renovating homes. Well, you know, I'm trying to tie it all in here.
Well, he'll be renovating homes in Amish country, so he won't be in Miami, will he?
No, he won't be in Miami. And that means that he will not be wearing the socks. In any event, Vanilla Ice Goes Amish. He'll debut on the network this year. Network executives Burton Jablin, do you know Burton Jablin?
I've heard of Burton Jablin, and I said to him, did you make that name up? And he said, aren't you sweet? And I said, no, really, did you? And he said, yes, I did. Please don't tell anyone. And I'm not speaking out of school, Robert.
Well, I still told you not to say anything.
Hold on. I'm not speaking out of school because he finally said, well, the cat's out of the bag. Go ahead and tell everyone that I made it up. And I said, why would you select a name like Burton Jablin? And he said, I thought it sounded very hip and Hollywood. And I said, you're kidding. You sound as if you come from a Slavic country with the last name Jablin. And he said, isn't that the thing they throw in the Olympics? And that's what I knew. I was talking to a very undereducated man. Let's call it that.
You thought they call it a javelin?
Yes, it's called a javelin.
No, wait. This is a great story.
It is, isn't it?
You talked to this guy, Burton Jablin.
Yes.
When?
Phil, I'm not going to give you a DNA sample.
All right. But was it recent?
Yes, when they launched the network, they had a press conference.
All right. And this guy, Burton Jablin, admitted to you that that's a made-up name because he thought it sounded Hollywood.
Yes, he thought it sounded very hip and sleek. He liked the idea of a spear traveling through the air.
Yeah, maybe it's hip and sleek if you come from the country of Mumbabo or something like that.
What Mumbabo, man? That ain't even a country, you racist. But hey, watch it. That guy's a racist.
I'm not a racist. It's a city. The only place you're going to sound hip and sleek is where they throw spears already.
They ain't throwing spears down there any more than they are anywhere else.
What about America?
Ever heard of Indians? And yeah, we do throw them in the Olympics, so there you go.
Well, Indians don't throw spears. They use bows and arrows, I thought.
Never mind. Would you just get to the story here?
Well, the fact is, Burton Jablin, I spoke with him.
And this guy said that he changed his name to Jablin because he thought that's what the thing was called that gets thrown in the Olympics.
Yes. And I said to him, Burton, darling, because he was very, very wound up and he was very excited about the network being started, I said, will you sit down and have a glass of ice water? I want to tell you something. And he was saying, well, I got to get going. I said, I understand that, but I need to tell you. The thing they throw in the Olympics is called a javelin. A javelin. And I spelled it out for him. And he said to me, how many other people know this? And
you're kidding.
No, I'm not. No, I am not.
That is a secret?
Yes. And I said, I would imagine a lot of people. And the last words he said to me were, damn it all to hell. And he picked up the glass that had the water in it, threw it across the lawn, and left for his car.
Is that the last you've talked to him?
No, I've talked to him since then, but...
You don't bring it up?
No.
All right, we're going to be right back. That's an interesting story. Burton Jablin, who gave himself that name because he thought that's the thing was you throw it in the Olympics, and he gave Vanilla Ice a show. Hey, whatever works. Phil Henry Show.
Well, that's the point. He did give Vanilla Ice a show.
Yeah, give Vanilla Ice a show, and he doesn't even know it's a javelin you throw.
It's a javelin, not a javelin.
Yeah, that's what I mean, a javelin.
You know your mics are live? Because every time...
Phil Henry.
Oh, I was kidding around. Welcome back here to the Phil Henry Show. We're here till 1 a.m. on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and we are your one-stop shopping place for all things that eventually just deconstruct talk radio. Whatever that means, it may not mean anything to you. It means a lot to me, or at one time it did, before I got under the influence of Glenn Beck and his weird theories. However, you said I was disgusting you, and so that kind of took my mind off of what I wanted to say.
Oh, it did. I don't think you knew what it was you wanted to say.
No, you said you were disgusted by what?
I was disgusted by what you said about, what?
Talk about his teacher.
Oh, your high school English teacher. You know, Phil, that's a woman with a husband and children.
Whoa, hold on. How do you know?
Well, she was an English teacher, right?
Yeah.
I'm assuming she was some kind... Well, then she was what, an old maid?
No, she could have been single and young. As it was, her name... Well, I won't tell you her name.
That was... Well...
Yeah, because I'm going to belt you if you say anything out of school, man, that I told you not to say. I'll say it, and of course I'm not going to say her name.
Well, you didn't have any sexual relations with her, did you?
No, I did not. Okay?
Well, Phil, then what's the problem with mentioning her name?
Because I'm just not going to embarrass her if she's still, you know, kicking around someplace.
Flo, man, kicking around like some old lady just... Yeah, what do you think she is? Like a hood ornament?
Wow. Hood ornament.
That was very cruel.
No, I had the hots for my English teacher. Dan and I were just talking because there's a story here. This is about as weird and as disgusting as they get, and they've been getting disgusting. Utah teacher and coach accused of object rape of 17-year-old student.
What's that mean?
You know what? You just have to listen. If you can't figure it out, that's your problem. Courtney Jarrell was placed in two positions of strong authority at Jordan, Utah, Riverton High School, teaching math and leading the sophomore team in the girls' basketball program. In a disturbing turn, it now appears that Jarrell used her authority to violate one of the very students she was charged with protecting. As reported by the Associated Press and a variety of other outlets, the Salt Lake Tribune among them, Jarrell was arrested on charges of object rape and felonious sexual abuse in connection with a disturbing sexual relationship she had with one of her 17-year-old female students. The Tribune reported that the object rape charge against Jarrell counts as a first-degree felony, while the sexual abuse charge is weighted as a second-degree felony. She's 22 years of age, her alleged victim, 17.
Oh, my God.
According to Jordan school district officials, Jarrell was suspended from a position with the school when allegations of the student affair first arose in March. Now, they don't mean student as in affair, as in love affair. They mean the affair as in an event. With the school board turning the case over to police, when more specific details of the relationship between the two arose, including the degree to which the two participated in sexual acts at the coach's house, the coach resigned permanently. We immediately looked into it, and within hours of the complaint, she was suspended, and everything was turned over to the Draper Police Department. So there you go, folks. Riverton student Catherine Orchard told the Salt Lake City TV network KSL, everybody loved her. My parents were even way shocked because my parents loved her too. They thought she was a great teacher. This is what happened. While these allegations about any teacher would stun their respective students, those who spoke up in the immediate aftermath of Gerald's resignation remembered the teacher who was nearly universally beloved. Police clearly agreed, though, that Gerald's attorney insisted the departure was mutual and that his client had left the school specifically to prepare to defend her name.
So what about your teacher?
Well, I'm not comparing that. This is a terrible story. But the thing that I wanted to bring up, more and more of these stories are happening. And the question I have to ask myself is, I didn't hear about this that much when I was a kid. And people will always say the following thing. When I was a kid, like say in the 60s, when I was in grade school and when I was in high school, and people will always say, well, it's happening more often. Well, you know, I don't personally believe that. I personally believe that it gets reported more often, that the means by which we can detect these things, the open channels of communications that we've established between students and administration, students and the police, parents and the police, has helped for these events to come out. I think we're looking for it maybe, and not in a paranoid way, but I think we're just sort of got our eyes open a little bit more for our kids. Look, you know, folks, do you think that all of a sudden one day people were abducting children and killing them? I mean, it's been happening for centuries, and yet it was Albert Fish in New York who decided to take a little girl off into the country and murder her. That was the beginning of the don't go with strangers thing that parents would tell their kids. That man didn't steal that girl. That man went away with that little girl with the permission of her parents.
Your kid, this is this Albert Fish, the man that put pins in his crotch?
Yeah, this guy put pins in his crotch and stuck them up his butt and everything.
All right, bud. Yes. And he walked up to this door and he said, may I take your daughter to a birthday party? My nephew's having a birthday party and I think your daughter would really like to go to a birthday party. I just noticed that you have a daughter. And this woman did something that was entirely normal for those days. It was not unheard of. Believe me, folks, today we look back and we say, how crazy can you be? Well, if we all lived back then, we would have done the same thing.
Well, wait just a minute. No, I would not. I like to think of myself as a little bit more intelligent.
No, you may be intelligent, Margaret. You would have done the exact same thing.
How do you know I would?
Because you would have been a woman of that era. You wouldn't be a modern 21st century woman. You'd be a woman in the 1920s. And you could be the most intelligent woman on your block, and you would still think, oh, you know, that happens all the time. People let their kids go off to birthday parties all the time. That sounds like fun. Where is it? It's over in the next block. Oh, great. I can send my son to go get her when the party's over. That's what this Mrs. Budd decided to do. She never saw her daughter again. She never saw her daughter again. She didn't know what had happened to her daughter. And what happened to her daughter was just horrifying. So from that case, parents suddenly told their children, well, you know, don't go with any strangers. That suddenly became a newsflash. A stranger murdered this child. Don't go with anybody you don't know. That was the case. So, you know, folks, it's not like the stuff just magically started happening with that guy. It's that suddenly the awareness of it became prominent. So now we cut to this teacher sexually abusing a student. I bet you this stuff has been going on. When I was in school, I heard guys saying things about this student and that teacher and this student and that teacher, and it blew me away, but now I believe it.
Well, what has this got to do with your teacher?
Well, my teacher, the one I'm talking about, has got nothing to do with having an affair with you. Well, it's got nothing to do with the sexual abuse. It has to do with me checking out the ass on my English teacher.
What was his name?
I'm going to belt you. What was his name? It was a she.
I know. Anyway, what was his name?
Man, that's funny. What was his name?
Yeah, ha, 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 ha. her name, and I ain't going to tell you. But, you know, as all of this stuff is happening, you know, and I look back on my formative years in school, I'm like a lot of people, a lot of guys, that's for sure. I'm thinking, man, I wonder if Mrs. So-and-so, if only she would have...
Well, that was the part that offended me, because you went, man, what I wouldn't do, and you wiped your mouth with the back of your hand like some greasy cow hand.
Yeah?
I didn't. It was offensive, because I've seen men...
You've seen men what?
I've seen men looking at me and doing that.
Oh, right.
Are you kidding me?
What? Well, look at you. How offensive can you be?
Margaret, are you telling me that some guy has been staring at you, leaning against a fence post and wiping his mouth with the back of his hand?
Yes, on more than one occasion. You know something? Maybe you guys don't get it, but there are men out there that, well...
That ogle you?
I'm just telling you what happened.
So a guy's looking at you, what was he saying?
He was leaning... I can get Frank on the phone. He was leaning against the fence, and he wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, and he looked at me and he went, what I wouldn't give.
Yeah, what he wouldn't give to...
Watch it, or I'll put my fist right through your head.
Now, I guess she means it, bud. What I wouldn't give what? Do you know what he was going to say?
No, I had no interest in what he was going to say. He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. He said, what I wouldn't give... And then he showed me his hands, and both of the palms were sweating.
Yeah, sure.
You're telling me I'm lying.
Well, what are you kidding me? Get Frank on the phone. This I gotta hear.
Go ahead.
All right.
This I gotta hear. This guy's palms were sweating, huh? We'll take a break. We'll be back with Frank Gray here on this historic evening tonight, where Margaret's gonna tell us all about some guy that was working on her. What was he doing?
He was a gardener. I don't know what he was doing. He was there at the house, either trimming the hedges or he was putting in a pool filter. I don't know.
All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
So anyway, that's that stuff. Nevada lawmaker, a surprise announcement during a debate on whether they should repeal the ban on gay marriage in Nevada. And this senator, a state senator, as they were debating this late into the evening, State Senator Kelvin Atkinson, a Democrat from North Las Vegas, told his Senate colleagues he is gay. During discussion of a measure to repeal the state ban on gay marriage, one state senator told his stunned colleagues he's gay. The Nevada Senate voted 12-9 Monday night to begin the process of repealing the gay marriage ban from the state constitution. Supported by 11 Democrats and one Republican, the bill, Senate Joint Resolution 13, would amend the state constitution to remove a provision declaring that marriage is only between a man and a woman. The measure also includes wording guaranteeing that religious organizations do not have to perform same-sex marriages. Well, yeah, that makes sense. If your religion... I mean, it's kind of, see, that's a dicey area, you know.
Well, now, wait a minute. You're not saying that you're the one that makes the big speech about religions can't violate rights.
Yes, you're right. Yes, you're right. Yes, you're right. You're right. I mean, I've often said that.
Got Father McCorder going to call up.
Father McCorder has called up or did call up?
He's calling now because he called me early and said he didn't want you. Hello? Yeah, Father McCorder?
Put him on the air.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Okay.
Tell him to get on the phone, man.
Get on the phone, but hold on. What? You're kidding. Yeah?
Give me that, will you, bud? Father McCorder, you there?
Yes, I'm right here. I was just kidding, but I've got... what I had were the winning numbers, you know, on the raffle that we were giving away, the old turntable, because, bud, I think... Did you say, bud, that you wanted to start your own mobile DJ business, right?
Yeah, I did want, God, with Chris Norton.
Hey, by the way, are we on the air? Because I don't see any kind of VU meter happening over here.
Will you listen to what's being said?
We are, because my VU meter doesn't work. All right, I'm sorry, bud, what?
Just did I want to get a mobile DJ, and I want to win a raffle on a turntable.
Yes, we want a church raffle here. It's for the Technics turntables that were donated to us by Huggy Jones, you know, this jockey that is a member of our parish.
Huggy Jones, yeah.
Yeah, he donated those Technic turntables, and I bought two tickets for Bud because he asked me to.
When's the raffle?
The raffle will be Sunday night, this coming Sunday night.
Well, good luck, Bud.
Thank you.
All right, so to talk about what it was you were talking about, and that is to marry openly a gay man. And I will tell you this before we start the discussion now, that I am, and I always have been, a heterosexual, even though...
Now, what difference does that make, Father?
Even though, allow me to finish, even though I haven't had sex with a woman in many a day.
All right, so what point does it make, though?
The point is, I'm a heterosexual. The point is, I'm a heterosexual, and I want that stated clearly. I don't want it stated that because you're a priest, you're gay. You understand that?
I understand, yeah.
But I don't understand, Father. What difference does it make whether you're gay or straight? You don't have sex.
I am straight. See, Margaret, what you're doing is...
No, what I'm doing is doesn't make any difference if we're talking about the debate on whether there should be gay marriage.
I understand that, but what I'm trying to say to you is before the discussion of gay marriage is openly discussed, I want to make it very clear that I'm straight, that I'm not gay, that I would have sex with a woman were I allowed to, but I'm not allowed because of the vows that I take of chastity.
Yes, did you have sex before you went into...
Now, hold on for a minute. Did you hear what I said?
Wait, Father, speak to me. Don't talk to Margaret.
Why can't he speak to me?
Well, what I'm saying is I'm the host of the show. What's your point?
My point is simply this. I am going to tell you, for the last time, I'm straight. You understand that?
Yes. What has that got to do with this...
I am opposed to gay marriage, and it's not because I'm closet. I'm, as you say, a hat box. And I heard Bud Dittman make that statement, too. And I also heard Robert say it, and I don't think it's funny at all.
Don't talk about a hat box.
I'm not a hat box.
What's a hat box? Oh, that, you mean deep in the closet?
Yes, deep in the closet. Way deep. Someone else called me a gun case, a hat box, and a shoehorn.
Well, those are all things that are very deep in the closet.
No, they're not. No, a shoehorn's right out front. A shoehorn is screaming to get out of the closet. I would say that if you're a shoehorn, you're screaming to get out of the closet.
What? A shoehorn? A shoehorn is something...
It goes in a shoe. Woo! You put me on, right?
Well, what? It doesn't matter. You're not gay. You're not in the closet.
No, and if I was in the closet, I'd be a shoehorn. I wouldn't be... Well, I don't know what I'd be, because I don't know whether or not I'd want to be... I don't know if I'd want to come out or not.
Well, and what is the fear of coming out?
Because I believe that gay marriage is against God's law, and it's based on Leviticus. It's based upon the laws of... I'm not going to get into the whole Bible thing. You understand where I'm coming from there.
I understand where you're coming from religiously. I get that, Father. I just don't understand where a religion dictates to the secular world, to civil law, dictates to, frankly, the Constitution of the United States.
Hold your horses there. There are two documents that I find sacred in this world. One of them is the Holy Bible, and the other is the Constitution of the United States of America.
This way, Father.
Right. Two documents that I find sacred.
And what if they were in conflict with each other?
That, I think, is the most horrific and terrible thing you could say about this wonderful country, that the Bible is in conflict with the Constitution.
I don't think it is. But apparently you do, because...
No, I didn't say that it was at all. I said that gay marriage is against the Constitution, and also I'm not gay.
Because you're making a big point about not being gay.
Because I don't want anybody thinking that I'm opposed to gay marriage because I'm a shoehorn. When in point of fact, I may be a hatbox. Do you understand?
No, I don't understand. What difference does it make?
Because if I were a hatbox, I'd be buried in the closet. And I would... If I were buried in the closet...
If you were buried in the closet, what would it matter what you thought?
Of course it matters what I think.
But what would you do if you was buried in a closet?
If I was buried in the closet...
You'd probably be against gay marriage, too.
Yes, I would be very much opposed to gay marriage.
All right, then what stops a guy from saying, Father McCorders just came out against gay marriage, he must be a hatbox?
I'm telling you right now And if you say that again, I'm going to come right out. I'm going to come unglued. I'm going to come out of my smock. I'm telling you right now.
Father McCoy was always...
Hold on for a minute, Robert. I'm talking to this one here that hosts the radio show. I'm telling you right now, I'm not a hatbox. I'm straight. I like women. I would like to have sex with women.
But that is against your vows.
Yes, it is against my vows, and so I won't have sex with women. But I'm so heterosexual that it drives me ape on a Friday night when I go home and all I've got is a bag of popcorn oil. There, I said it.
That, Father, it was not necessary. The point is that you say you're a heterosexual with such emphasis that it's almost as if we suspect you of being gay.
Yeah, see, I knew she'd say that.
Well, Father, can you
No, 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 no. I knew she'd say that. There's no winning here. I call myself a hatbox. You think that I'm deep in the closet, I'm gay. I tell her I'm straight. You say, well, that's suspicious. Then I say I'm a shoehorn. I'm just ready to, right on the edge to jump right out of the closet, and you say I'm fruitier than a fruit salad. So where does a man like me go? Where do I begin to find the truth in my life? And I can tell you that I have had in my day some lonely Friday nights.
Okay, so you're a heterosexual. Good for you. There's a lot of heterosexuals out there in the world opposed to gay marriage. You're just one more.
I told you I wanted to make sure that at least that much was on the record.
Well, I don't like the idea of you alone on a Friday night with popcorn oil.
Well, I don't either. And
I mean, I don't like you talk. I'm losing my voice.
We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Well, I look at... It.
Hold on, Father. My colleagues here about WrestleMania, because I saw the last WrestleMania I ever saw was WrestleMania 5. Now, before you begin to think of me as even dumber than you think I am, wrestling, when I finally got into when I finally understood it, I began to enjoy it, and I really began to enjoy wrestling the way the formerly WWF, now WWE, presented it. It was big, and it was big arena stuff, and there was lots of lights and lots of smoke and a lot of fun. And so I used to watch at least the WrestleMania, and there was a show on TV that was just about the funniest damn thing. It was a show called WWF Raw, but in the middle of it, they had the Bobby the Brain Heenan show.
I saw that. That was the best show. Bobby the Brain Heenan with that little short guy.
Bobby the Brain Heenan, yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, well, just, Margaret. Bobby the Brain Heenan was this little guy. I say little guy. He was a former wrestler. All these guys are former wrestlers, you know.
What about Gorilla Monsoon?
Gorilla Monsoon, yeah. With a name like that?
Well, you know, that doesn't mean... You think he was a wrestler?
With a name like Gorilla Monsoon, what do you think?
Well, maybe that was his nickname.
Yeah, that could have been his nickname, yeah. Or maybe he was a wrestler. Did you ever see Gorilla Monsoon? He looked like a formidable guy. I mean, he was a good guy. You know, he was the announcer, and he had his glasses, and he looked like a typical ring announcer. But I guess in the day, he was a wrestler. I don't know I don't know anything about him.
What about that other guy, Jesse the Body Ventura?
You never heard of him?
That guy became the governor of Minnesota, you jackball.
That's the same guy?
Yes, that Fruit Loop. Jesse the Body Ventura with his flowered, whatever he did. And I remember at that WrestleMania, in fact, Gorilla Monsoon gave him some crap. He said, boy, the money you put into your wardrobe, and it was like he was wearing jeans and like a tank top. Anyway, I forget, but it was very, very exciting. And to me, watching this sport, and it's really an exhibition, I suddenly got it. I said, it's theater. And of course, this had been something that had occurred to a lot of smarter people than me many years before. But it just all of a sudden dawned on me. I watched wrestling as a kid. I mean, what kid didn't like it? I loved it. It was hard for me to believe as a kid that it was fake. When I was a kid, I really believed it was real. And when I was growing up, it was Bobo Brazil.
Who was Bobo Brazil?
Bobo Brazil was this big, tall dude, and he specialized in the headbutt. And he would butt a dude's head, man. I mean, he cracked some skulls, man. I'd see blood, so I don't know.
Well, they fake that. Don't they have fake blood?
No, they don't.
Well, they got a couple of tricks that they do. They have the concealed razor blades, things like that will break the skin. But in any event, there was also the Destroyer, and there was also Haystacks Calhoun. There's cats in that era. Now, none of those guys survived into the glory days, into the big time days of the 80s. The 80s was that was wrestling's 80s and 90s was wrestling's heyday, man. And watching it, I thought it was very impressive. And then I realized, you know, this is theater. It's pretty damn good theater. I even came up with an idea for a wrestler.
You're kidding?
No, I wanted to have El Presidente.
What's that one going to be?
El Presidente was going to be a president. He'd have a suit, you know, and he'd walk, and there'd be Secret Service guys coming in front of him and Secret Service guys behind him, and he'd enter the ring.
And the President of the United States would strip down to briefs.
Well, you don't really know he's the president. It's just El Presidente. You never did say, I guess the guy would have to say.
Yeah, because the ring announcer is going to go, now, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States or something.
You could make up a country. You could say the President of Globovia, or I don't know.
Globovia, huh? Who's going to buy that?
Well, Margaret, it's wrestling, okay?
Oh, you're right. Those idiots.
Well, you don't look down your nose at it. I'm telling you right now, people get excited about it. They know it's phony baloney, but they like it anyway.
I disagree with you. I think that maybe you figured it out and you appreciate the theater. I think 90% of the knuckleheads that you see on television that are jumping up and down and their fat mothers and wives, yes, I think they all think it's real.
I don't.
Man, probably 50-50. No, you can't know that.
I don't. I just don't. I'm telling you. Because it's just too much has come out, you know. It is the day and age of the internet, after all. But yeah, my idea was to have this guy, El Presidente, and he'd come down and, you know, you could play the national anthem of whatever the hell country it was. I mean, if he was the American president, nobody's going to buy it's the American president.
Why not?
Because the what are you kidding? The real American president's in Washington.
Yeah, it'd have to be a guy who's president of another country.
You'd probably have to make him a bad guy.
Well, then I suppose he'd be the president of some third world country. Isn't that how it's done?
No, not necessarily. But you'd have to make up a country. And anyway, he'd have Secret Service guys, and then he'd get up into the ring, and yeah, he'd strip off his suit, and he'd just have, like, black wrestling shorts or a black wrestling leotard or whatever the hell they call it.
That's what like a ballerina.
You can't dress him up like that.
It's called, I don't know what it's called, man. It's a unitard or something.
Well,
listen, just don't bug me, you guys, because you're bugging me now. It that got nothing to do with retard. It's unitard, leotard. It's a piece of wrestling equipment.
Right.
So then he'd get up into the ring, see? And maybe he'd have a tattoo of a flag or I don't know.
And he's a bad guy.
Yeah, he'd be a bad guy. He'd be the president of some crap can. I guess you'd have to make him a dictator. Nah, that wouldn't work.
Well, I think it sounds good, but he'd have to be like a military dictatorship.
Yeah, make him like Hitler. Why can't you have Hitler?
Hitler would be too jacked up, man. People would like really be, nah. You'd have a riot. You know,
are you trying to tell me people would have a riot? Why? Because they think that's the real Hitler?
No, because they don't like the symbol. Symbols are very important to people. Symbols. I always try to tell people about symbols. You know, symbols, not the kind you hit in a drum kit. Symbols, as in a wedding ring. That's a symbol. The picture that your little girl made in kindergarten that you hang on your office wall. That's a symbol. Is it great art? No, but it's a symbol of how much you love this child. If anybody were to take that picture down, you'd break their hands, wouldn't you?
Well,
you would. If anybody took your wedding ring from you, just a wedding ring, maybe it's not even the greatest wedding ring, but it represents something, you'd break that person in half. This is why symbols are powerful. You know, if somebody took a favorite tie that your child gave you for a present, and they ripped it in half, you'd kill that person. So it's what a thing symbolizes. And that's why, you know, you get a guy named Hitler and you have him crawl into a wrestling ring, that cat, they'd tear him apart. Then you'd really have a wrestling match. It wouldn't be much of a wrestling match. It would be more like there's your lynching, Hitler.
Well, it would be an innocent man because he's playing the part of Hitler.
Yes, but he would be a stupid innocent man for ever thinking that he was going to walk down into a major arena dressed as Adolf Hitler in a major wrestling exhibition and think he was going to get away with just being the bad guy for the night. Jeez!
You're trying to tell me they'd kill a guy like that?
I'm telling you that whoever runs the wrestling federations, whoever the hell it is that runs all that stuff, would say to that guy, no way. You are not going into the ring as Hitler. You're going to come out with some other kind of bad guy. It ain't going to happen, man. You come out dressed as Hitler, we will stop you and we'll turn you around and send you back to the locker room.
What if the guy's big and bad?
Oh, will you guys get serious? Photo of cop. Listen to this. This is a hell of a great story. I may be saying something really shocking here, folks, but I actually like it when cops get good publicity. I told you once, I'm a corny, old-fashioned guy. I just am. I'm an old-fashioned guy. I'm just, you know, I like it. I like cops. I like soldiers. I like them when they do good things. I want the good guy to win. I've lived a long time on this planet, and I haven't changed at all. I've seen some bad stuff. I've been through some bad times. I've felt my fair share of the slings and the arrows of outrageous fortune, and I still like good guys. And cops, in my opinion, for the most part, are the good guys. And here is a police officer in Brookline, John Bradley. And this was a photograph of him. And I'll show it to our listeners and to our viewers on Phil TV. You see this police officer? He's going up the driveway of a home, and he's got two big bottles of milk. Now, this photo of this officer carrying milk to a family that was locked down because of the Marathon bombing has created a buzz on the internet, and it's gone, as they say, viral. According to social media, the officer purchased and brought the milk to a family with young children who could not get to the store themselves because of the ongoing manhunt for the Boston bombing suspects on Friday. The family snapped a photo of the officer carrying the two jugs to the house and posted it on Twitter. From there, the image spread across social networks, gaining attention rapidly as an act of kindness during a terrible crisis. By the end of the weekend, the Brookline Police Department's Twitter and Facebook accounts had identified this officer as John Bradley. So there he is. You see, it's hard to see a police officer like that and people that are constantly criticizing cops for whatever reason. You can't do it. You just can't do it because look at what he did. He delivers milk to a lockdown family. All right, we'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Join us for our archive podcast. Join us for our daily podcast. Join us for our video cast. Join us for our webisodes. Join us for the Milwaukee Lions. Join us. Marry us. Love us.
Truth
be one with
is
us.
Our bitch. Well, that's the Phil Hendry Show. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, man. How is it that people within 2 weeks of this event are already convinced that these two guys that they said did this bombing didn't do it? And, of course, they're going to turn around and ask me, well, how do you know that he did? Oh, well, that's why they're having a trial. That's why they're having a trial. Well, then, you know, but you see, they're having a trial. Now, I personally believe that they did do it, and I can give you my reasons. And they're concrete, they're black and white, they're photographed, they're recorded. They are from the mouths of one of the accused, the other being dead. So I've got a nice little treasure trove of reasons why I think they did do it. Now, you, if you don't believe they did, like there are people who, quote, don't believe they did. Here's somebody get a load of this, man. It's, this is the kind of thing, and I'm always reminded, people always tell me, you know, Phil, just relax, because this is America, and people have the right to think, and this, and that, and everything else. Anita Tenesheva, the user who launched this petition for change.org, change what? Change to, let's change into being a little dumber. What do you think? It'd just be kind of a kick, man. It's change. Change.org petition to guarantee Jokhar Tsarnaev the right to a fair trial addressed to Barack Obama. Well, dig it. That's what every American and everybody who is tried in U.S. courts is guaranteed, a fair trial. So we don't need a petition to remind us of that. You may be thinking of some, like, other era in the history of the world, maybe another country, maybe America back in the 20s or something. You can't possibly be thinking about this country now. We believe that within the chaos caused by the Boston Marathon explosion, two young men were wrongfully accused of something they did not do, and one of them has lost his life before even getting the opportunity of a proper trial, Anita Tenesheva, the user who launched the petition, wrote. A cop's dead. Another police officer was seriously wounded. Okay. These guys had explosives. They had guns. And one of them said, yes, yes, we did it. We self-radicalized. We didn't like the U.S. involvement in Iraq and in Afghanistan. But in your mind, Ms. Tenesheva, you know.
You know, you're getting too heavy here, Phil.
Yeah, you said you weren't going to do no politics.
This stuff pisses me off.
Yeah, but just throw it away, man.
Let me just read this. Boston bombing suspect charged at hospital bedside. So anyway, we do not wish to see the blood of yet another innocent victim, someone who by U.S. law is innocent until proven guilty. It is vital to end this persecution, as all the conflicting information shown by the media and footage from the incident seen by people from all corners of the world doesn't manifest itself as enough evidence to condemn Tsarnaev. Why do you think he's innocent, lady? Oh, God, man. Are we going to have to go through this?
People have a right to their opinion.
Oh, they got a right. A guy said once that you may have a right to your opinion, but you don't have a right to have it respected. You don't have a right for people to agree with it. You don't have a right for everyone to fall on their knees and go, oh my goodness gracious, aren't you just marvelous? You have a right to your opinion, but what you don't have a right to is everybody just falling down en masse and worshiping the ground you walk on because you're so freaking brilliant. You don't have a right not to have people laugh at your ass. You know, you have a right to your opinion, but it doesn't mean that you have a right to walk down the street and someone says, there's that knucklehead that says, the boogeyman and Martians caused it. Ha, 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 ha. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Don't worry about it. All right. So thank you very much for that, and we really appreciate it. Now, moving on.
Yes, let's talk about Ozzy Osbourne and Sharon Osbourne, the fact that Ozzy's back on it. I'm Margaret Gray. Ozzy Osbourne.
Give me that. Ozzy's back on it.
Yes, he's back on the pills.
Yeah, they said he's back on the pills.
Osbourne addressed recent rumors that her family problems on Tuesday's edition of The Talk, the CBS chat show that she co-hosts. Sharon Osbourne says she and husband Ozzy are not splitting. She simply drove Ozzy back to pills and alcohol to give her something exciting to talk about on the show. She's devastated by their struggles, but she likes the fact that the ratings are up on the show.
Let me see that.
I'm just kidding around. I'm kidding.
You can get sued for that.
No, I can't. Hey, there you go. There's a conspiracy you got to think about. Did Sharon Osbourne drive Ozzy back to the pills and the booze in order to pump the ratings for her show? Why don't you start investigating that? That's one that is worthy of investigation. It'll probably come to the same conclusion that this other, you know, it's crap. But at least you won't do that much damage. She says she's devastated by their struggles. She added the couple has dealt with worse before. So apparently Ozzy fell off the wagon, and he has had a year and a half long relapse into prescription drug and alcohol abuse, which he made public in an apologetic Facebook post last week. If nobody knew about it...
Well, what do you mean if nobody knew about it? He's got to tell his fans that he's back on it.
What do you mean he's back on it?
You know what I mean.
Uh-uh.
Well, I'm not gonna...
Well, what do you mean, it?
You talking about, like, heroin?
No, he's just back on... He's back on the Sneaky Pete.
The Sneaky Pete. So he's back using drugs and he's back boozing. So?
So he goes and he apologizes to everyone on Facebook and they suddenly go, oh, Ozzy, I didn't know that you'd fallen off the wagon. Thank you for telling us. And now we can hate you and talk about you. And Sharon will be embarrassed and mortified before the eyes of the world. And I don't think it's fair.
Oh, she's not mortified, embarrassed. Sharon, look, listen to what she said. She said, we've been through worse. This too shall pass, she said.
That is a biblical phrase that I...
That's not. Is it a biblical phrase? Ozzy Osbourne was a founding member of heavy metal pioneers Black Sabbath, to use your pronunciation guide, Margaret. But he left the group in 1979. The 64-year-old has since rejoined, and the band's new studio album is out in June. Now, I think he got fired from Black Sabbath.
Yes, he was fired from Black Sabbath, and he was holed up in some dump down on Melrose. And apparently they were looking for him, or he owed money to somebody.
Well, what it was he owed money to his manager, and his manager happened to be the father of Sharon Osbourne. And Sharon was delegated by her dad to go down to wherever it was that Ozzy was staying and collect this money from him. And she said, and I hope I'm getting the story right. If I'm not, then you can report that directly to the Osbournes. No, I think I've got it pretty much.
Wait a minute. He was staying where?
He was staying at a motel on Melrose. On Melrose, is it Avenue or Boulevard? Melrose Boulevard? Melrose Avenue. He was staying at a motel.
Yeah, but which one?
What does it matter which one?
Well, I mean, if it was a famous one, they might want you to tell them about it, and they would be able to use the publicity.
What the hell just happened to you, man?
Yeah, it's not like you put your finger in a light socket.
I'm just trying to spit it out.
Okay, it was a Motel 6. Does that make you feel better?
Well, you better not say that.
Why?
Well, they're not going to want people knowing that Ozzy Osbourne was stinking it up.
Why wouldn't they? What are you talking about? I think he was actually at the Tropicana, the old Tropicana down there. Isn't that where Tom Waits used to live and they had mud wrestling and stuff?
I don't know. What are you looking at? Like, I know the answer to that.
Well, there was a very famous motel on Melrose where there was a lot of mud wrestling and jazz like that. Anyway, Ozzy Osbourne's down there. Sharon knocks on the door. He answers the door, and she said that when she met him, he was immediately very charming, and he was very full of humor, and he was not anywhere near the wastrel sort of degenerate that she was expecting, and he was not, a thief. He was going to pay back her father, and she decided then and there to take over his career, managing his career and helping him back on his feet, and that's exactly what she did do. And as you know, I think about a year or two later, he came out with Blizzard of Oz with Crazy Train and Shot in the Dark and all those great songs. And the rest is...
And the rest is him back on it.
Is history. World famous, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Welcome to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what the hell it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows only dream of going. They dare not. We are a hand grenade in the middle of that talk radio talk radio lineup. Anyway, welcome to the I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Welcome to the program. 877-876-7445 is our number. We're online every single night with a live video cast, Phil TV and HD, of our radio show here from the El Pacifico at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. So you can check us out there. I'd like to, a little note here, a little promotional note, that I'll be with Jimmy Pardo on Jimmy's Never Not Funny podcast. Jimmy's a terrific guy, funny as hell. He's got a very popular podcast. I was very honored to be invited on the show. We did an hour with Jimmy Pardo and the crew, and it was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. So check it out. It, as Jimmy calls it, and as they say in the music business, a 1980s music business, it drops on Monday.
Hey.
Thank you, bud. Also, our podcast, episode 26, is out today, our podcast, and it's out today at philhenryshow.com. Hit that podcast banner on our homepage. It is the 1981 Milwaukee Lions versus Virginia. Jack Igagdor and Brett Morrison with the play-by-play. And it's bizarre, it's wild, it's crazy. And by the way, you can follow the Milwaukee Lions on Twitter at twitter.com/Milwaukee Lions. You can also follow us, but I won't go through that right now. 877-876-7445. Now, I'm asking Robert, we had this gentleman, Gary, on the line, right?
Yeah, Gary Rieger is his name.
I'm sorry?
Gary Rieger.
Gary Rieger. Gary, how are you?
I'm doing good, yes, sir.
How are you, man?
Yes, sir, I'm doing very good, thank you.
And, Gary, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Palm Springs, California. And I'm in the Wycliffe Country Club, which where my wife lives. And
all right, now hold on. I don't want to get all of that information. And Robert said that you had a story that you wanted to, well, it wasn't a story you want to tell, but it's a situation arising from some stuff that you've got in storage?
Yes, sir.
Tell me about that.
All right, I've got some furniture that is being stored in my wife's garage right now. She has a condominium at the club where she lives, and I had asked if I could store furniture there.
Now, you're not with your wife?
No, sir.
And why is that? You separated?
No, sir, we're divorced.
Okay, so you're divorced. So I guess I need to kind of start at the beginning here.
Yeah, we got a divorce last year. I mean, it was final last year, and I had some furniture already that was stored at her condominium, and that's where it is right now. And I'd asked her if I could keep it there, and she said that she wanted to start to charge me, and I said that would be fine, that I would give her I think she's asking me $300 a month, so I'd store the furniture there. And I said that I would continue to pay that, and so all of a sudden now she is telling me I've got to get it out, and I wanted to see if I could get some either help from law enforcement. That's number one.
Now, why do you need help from law enforcement?
Well, because I feel that...
Tell him you think of being evicted?
Yeah, I feel in a lot of ways it's like it's an eviction that is illegal, because I've had the furniture there since we were divorced. I'd asked her if I could put the furniture there, and she said that I could, and then I kept it there for the first year, actually for the first 6 months, and then she said that she wanted some money. She wanted payment in lieu of, to pay for me keeping it there. And she asked me for $300 a month. I said that I would pay her $300 a month. And here about 2 months ago, when I got laid off because they were doing they had a subdivision over here just below Cathedral Canyon Boulevard, and I was working on that, and all of a sudden they ran out of money, so they laid off probably about a half a dozen framers, and I was one of them. And so I did not have any money to continue paying for the rental, but I told her that if she could allow me to keep my furniture there, and she refused. And I said to her that it was a very curious way to treat, you know, family, that she would not allow me at least to keep my furniture in the storage there. And
when you say family, what do you mean by family?
Well, by family, I mean that we were married. And
but you're divorced now, right?
We're divorced now, but when you marry somebody, you are a member of their family, and you may get divorced from them, but you have been, it's as if you are part of their family. And I don't say that because I consider her still my wife. I don't consider her my wife. She's married, as a matter of fact, and, you know, has a husband, and this is a home they bought together, I guess. But so I'm not trying to intrude that way. I'm simply saying that as a member of her family, even though I'm paying, which I didn't think that I'd have to do, for her to tell me that I've got to get my furniture out of there is tantamount to... an eviction, I think.
Well, hold on here for a minute, Gary, because you're moving into areas here where I may not necessarily agree with you.
All right, sir.
First of all, when you say that you're a member of her family, I don't quite get that. You were married.
We were married, yeah.
You were married, but you're divorced.
Yes, sir, but when you marry somebody, you have become part of their family, see, and now...
But you're divorced now.
I understand that. I understand it.
Okay, and so being divorced from a woman means you're no longer in her family.
No, I don't see it quite that way. That was not how I was raised, and I've tried to explain it to Tanya too. Because when you are a member of a family, even if you move out, if you're an 18-year-old kid and you move out, you are still a member of that family. You don't live there anymore, but you're still a member of that family.
And but a divorce is different from a kid moving out. A divorce is a legal separating of what was once a legally constituted family, but now you've gone to court.
No, I understand that, but you're not listening to me.
Well, I thought I was.
No, because you were a child one time, and you moved out of your house. Legally, you were the responsibility of your parents. When you moved out of the house, you are no longer legally the responsibility of your parents. But you are still a member of that family. But you're not living in that house. So when you say that there was a legal separation, there's always legal separation involved in the moving around of family members. It's all the only point I wanted to make. I would not make a big issue out of this were it not for the fact that Tanya told me that she was now telling me I had to get the furniture out of there. I was paying $300 a month.
Well, did she give you some notice that you had to get your furniture out of there?
No, sir. She did.
Well, hold on. What?
No, you said she did, though.
In what way?
You said that she called you up, said you had 2 months?
Oh, yeah. She gave me 60 days, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Did she say to you, you got to get your furniture out of here at a certain time?
Yes, sir. She gave me 60 days. That was back in May, and the time, the 60 days is up. But I had explained to her that as a member of her family, I would expect some consideration. That's all.
Well, it's obvious to me that she doesn't agree with this family thing.
No, I don't think that's the problem at all. I think that she does, but she's still angry at Bay for the things that I did when we were married. And I think, obviously, she's under the influence of her husband, which I think is obviously they're married, and he's going to advise her, but I don't know the nature of their relationship. It might be where he has a lot of control over her, you know. And
well, you know, I want to tell you something, Gary. I'm not really that comfortable with some of the stuff you're saying, because you speculating as to the husband's relationship with his wife, okay?
Yes, sir.
Is neither here nor there. I mean, we could sit here all day and have a nice conversation about that, but it doesn't have anything to do with anything. You see what I'm saying?
Well, yes, sir, I do, and I appreciate what you're saying, but again, as a member of her family, all I'm asking for is...
Well, you're not a member of her family, and if you want to ask me, if you ask me what I think the problem is here, the husband may be saying to the wife, you know, you need to get this guy's stuff out of the garage.
Well, that's not just a guy in the sense that I was her husband, and as such, I was a member of her family. And now I'm a member of her extended family. I'm not saying that I'm her husband. I'm not trying to be her husband. For that matter, Mr. Henry, I don't want to be her husband, you know. She has a husband, but now all of a sudden she's telling me I have to move my furniture out of the garage. And I don't understand that, because I had my furniture in there for free. She started to charge me 6 months ago, which I thought was unfair, but I went ahead, I paid for that. And now she's telling me it has to be moved out, and it has to be moved out by, I think it was yesterday. And
so you went all the way. Do you live in Palm Springs?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and so wasn't very far to go to the...
No, sir. She lives. I live on Country Club, and she lives over on Cathedral Canyon.
Okay, so what are you doing over there?
Well, I wanted to talk to her and see if we could extend the deadline at least. Barring that, I wanted to talk to her and find out just why she all of a sudden is treating me like this, you know.
See, this is the part that is bothering me, because you are not a member. I know you think you are. You're not a member of her family, and she's got a husband there, and at some point, he's going to sort of confront you.
Well, no, sir, I don't. It doesn't have to come to that. All I'm doing is trying to explain.
No, there's nothing for you to explain. Well, hold on for a minute, okay? Is he there?
Yeah, Gary, you want to hold on?
Yes, sir, I will.
All right, Gary, hang on the line, 877-876-7445. Let me get back on the line here with Gary when we come back. Our number, 877-876-7445, as we're talking to Gary. What's his last name?
Yeah, Rieger.
Gary Rieger, who's been keeping his furniture at his ex-wife's house and feels that he has the right to continue to keep it at his ex-wife's house because even though he's an ex-husband, they're still members of the same family. Now, that's interesting. 877-876-7445, just one of those human interest stories that we have on the Phil Hendry Show from time to time. We'll be right back, and we've got some Olympic coverage, or at least some Olympic commentary coming up next hour here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Here. Now, Gary, we're talking here with Gary Rieger. Gary, do you literally believe, or do you understand at least, and Gary's story is an interesting one, folks, so hold on. Gary has got, he's got furniture in his ex-wife's garage. Is that where it is, Gary?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's in her, part of it's in a garage, and there is some that is in a guest bedroom.
All right, hold on. So, Gary, you divorced this woman. You asked if you could keep the furniture at her house, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, she's got a new house with this new husband.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, at one point, you had the furniture, and then you needed to store it?
Yes, sir. What happened was we divorced, and she went off. She got her own apartment, and I had my place. And because of the fact that we got divorced, and she had her name on the lease, and she moved out, I got stuck with the rent, and I couldn't pay it, which is also something that I would like to work out with her, but she says that we were both on the lease, and she already talked to the landlord, which I've got the paperwork.
Okay, hold on, but I don't want to talk about that, all right?
Yes, sir, I know, but just to give you the background, so anyway, I had the furniture, and I was living with my parents very, very briefly for about just a couple of weeks, but I needed to put the furniture somewhere, and that's where she was getting married, and they were living together. And
what length of time are we talking about between the time you got divorced and the time that she started living with this new guy?
Probably about maybe a year and a half.
Okay, so there was a year and a half there where you were living in the old place. She moved out?
Yes, sir, she moved out. She got another place, and I was in our place, but then I got evicted because she would not pay the rent anymore.
And was she paying the rent there too?
I'm sorry, sir?
Was she paying the rent when you two were living together?
Yes, sir. She was paying the rent only because I was on disability at that time. I'm a construction, basically I'm a framing carpenter, but I do a lot of other things besides. I do electrical, I do plumbing, and I got hurt on the job, so I was on disability, which is also another situation that I'm trying to straighten out right now, where they have not paid me for a couple of months. But in any event, I that was the situation. So when I got evicted, then I moved in with my parents.
All right. And in the meantime, she got married, or
no? She met this guy, and I guess you know, he's going to promise her the good life and all of that, and you know, waved a whole bunch of dollar bills, I guess, under her nose, and so she moved in with him, and now they're married, okay? But in the meantime, I'd said to her, can I move my stuff into your garage?
All right, so you asked to move your stuff into the garage that she had with this man.
Well, yeah, it was her garage. My understanding was it was her garage, and I didn't know that they owned this place together. By the time I found out that they owned it together, all of my furniture was in her, being stored in her garage.
Okay. Not fair enough. She gave you permission. Now she asks you for to pay for it.
She asked you to pay rent?
Yes, sir. She asked me to pay for storage.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. And then she asked you to move it out of there.
Yes, sir. That's correct. Back in April or May, I forget when, but she said, you got to move it out of here now. And I said, I'm paying for it, $300 a month, and I'm able to afford that because I was disabled, so I'm still living at my mother and father's house, but I was collecting disability checks, so I was able to afford the $300 a month. Now she's telling me that she wants it moved out, and I'm a little confused about that, you know. As I said,
well, the thing that I think is the most troubling for me is you're describing yourself as a member of her family. Okay?
I understand that, sir, but that's just how I was raised.
All right, I appreciate that. If you were raised, though, let me just, I'm not going to judge, but you were raised, so I understand, once you marry a woman, you're always a member of her family, whether you're divorced or not.
Say that again, sir, I'm sorry.
Once you marry a woman,
yes, sir.
You are a member of her family, whether you get divorced or not.
Yes, sir. And that doesn't mean anything about still being married to her or controlling her or anything. It just means the courtesy that you would show a family member. She's not showing me. And I told her, I said, we are members of the same family. Why don't you allow me to keep my stuff here? The fact that you're charging me money, I think, is bad. And she said, my husband, she said, Dave wants me to move it out. And I said, I don't think, why don't you explain it to Dave? And she said, she started in on me, and it was a whole thing. But anyway, that's why I come out here to try to talk to her, and she won't answer her phone or anything.
Okay, look, you're out there trying to talk to her now. Is her husband home?
I don't know. I haven't talked to him.
Well, you ought to just turn around and get out of there, man. Is your furniture there? What happened?
Well, I'm disconnected.
We got disconnected. Great. Get him back on the line, will you?
All right.
877-876-7445. Phil Henry Show. We just lost the call, but we are talking to this guy, Gary Rieger, who's out in the desert, and he's got furniture that he was keeping at his ex-wife's house, and she's told him to get it out of there. She's married. She's got another husband. And Gary considers himself still to be a part of the family. Is he there? Gary, are you still consider? I'm sorry we got disconnected, man.
Oh, yes, sir. I might have been my problem because I was running the camera there.
Okay, no problem. You consider yourself to be part of her family?
I consider us to be family members, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm still married to her. And I asked her to explain that to Dave, who's her husband, so that he would understand that there's nothing wrong with me having my furniture in the garage, at least until I'm able to get off disability or find another place, But she says she's going to move it out of the garage. She said she was going to give it to a... whether it's a Goodwill or a St. Vincent de Paul or one of these agencies. And so I drove over here to talk to her.
Well, she doesn't want to talk to you, and she's not picking up her phone.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. She may not be home, but that's why I'm waiting here at the gate.
You're waiting at the gate to their condominium complex?
Yes, sir, but I'm not going to... It's not what you're thinking. I mean, I just want to see when she goes in, I can follow her in, and then I can talk to her.
You're going to follow her in?
Yes, sir, I'm not... It's not what you think. I just want to talk to her about...
Well, I'll tell you, this is a woman with a husband and another life, and you're sitting there at the gate waiting to talk to her. It sounds a little suspect. You know what I'm saying?
I know how it sounds, but I'm not intending anything other than to try to remind her of her obligation to me, because when we were married, okay, when Caitlin and I got married, she understood how it was with my family, that we are... we're members of the family, even if we get divorced.
Yeah, but she's got a husband. What's the guy's name?
Well, her husband's name is Dave.
All right, Dave doesn't think so, or at least it doesn't sound like Dave thinks so, because he's the guy that wants the furniture out of there. He didn't get disconnected, did he?
No, I put him on hold.
Okay, we'll be back with Gary Rieger here as he talks with us about a very interesting set of values here from a man who is divorced from a woman, but still considers himself to be a member of the family, at least in terms of her doing him the favor of storing his furniture for him. 877-876-7445. The world famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back here from the El Pacifico.
Phil Henry.
The Phil Henry Show here, and Gary on the line with us here from Palm Springs. It's very interesting, Gary, the way you were raised. You are a member of a family, even though you're divorced.
Well, yes, sir. I don't expect her to be my wife, see, but look, we made payments on a car together. We made payments on the same car for, you know, as long as we were married.
How long were you married to this girl?
We were married 2 years, and then she just all of a sudden started complaining about everything, you know, and that's fine. I can understand, I guess. People change, but I didn't change, you know, but we did make payments on this car. She still has the car. So the thing that I wanted to ask her was, if I cannot keep my furniture in her garage, can I want to use the car because I feel there's a trade-off there.
Okay, so, you know, you have a view of life here that is very interesting. You feel that you're still members of the same family. You feel that she should at least keep your furniture in storage for free, but you will pay $300 a month, and if she doesn't do that, then you want to borrow the car.
Well, I made payments on that car, okay?
But she got it in the divorce, is that right?
She got it in the divorce because we had a divorce arbitrator or a divorce mediator that they have in the state that was very unfair and did not take into consideration some of the issues that I have, and I needed that car. And
but she got the car in the divorce, isn't that right?
Legally, yes, sir. She did get the car in the divorce.
Okay, so she does. She's not under any obligation to allow you to use it.
She is not under any obligation to allow me to use it. Is that what?
Yes, that's what I said.
Well, she's not under any obligation to allow me to use it, but she's has to.
She doesn't have to do anything. She doesn't have to do anything.
Well, in what sense do you mean? Because
she's not a member of your family. She's you. I know you think she is. Okay.
Well, I know what you mean, Mr. Henry. Legally, that's true. I'm just saying that. That's not how I was raised, and she and Tanya understood that. I told her that over and over when we were married, okay?
Well, you might have told her that that's how you were raised. You might have told her that this is how you do things, you know?
And also, when I told her that, I said that came down to after we was, you know, if we were to get a divorce, you know? Now, I'm not saying that I'm threatening her. I don't want to hurt her. I don't want to get into it with her husband or anything.
No, but you're waiting around the gate there where she lives, and you're going to follow her in.
Yeah, if they let me, you know.
So you will stay, if they say, no, sir, you can't go in, you'll stay outside.
Well, I don't see why they would say that. I mean, all I'm going to do is talk to her for like 2 minutes, that's all.
No. You're not listening to me. Are you going to stay outside if the security guard there tells you to stay outside?
I don't see why he would. That's all I'm saying. Because
it may be a rule. It may be the security guard himself.
Well, I mean, if he's not being reasonable about it, you know,
what are you not understanding that I'm saying here? Because what I've got here, you know, what you're telling me here.
No, Mr. Henry, I don't want to get into an argument. You know, I just called up to get a legal opinion.
I'm going to give you the legal opinion.
But you're not a lawyer, right?
No, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't need to be a lawyer. I don't need to be a lawyer. I'll give you the legal opinion. Okay.
Okay.
All right. You're not allowed, if she doesn't want you near her, you're not allowed near her. If she doesn't want you near her house, you don't get, it doesn't matter whether she, you know, you made payments on the car or not, she doesn't have to lend you the car. She got it in the divorce. It's paid for, right?
I guess. I mean, if she continued, well, yeah, it was paid for. I was going to say if she stopped making payments, but I made at least half of those payments. And
I understand, but it doesn't make any difference. It's her car. It's her car. It's her car. And I happen to know about divorces, which means she's got the pink slip is in her name. Number two, it's her house, okay?
Well, technically it's her husband Dave's house, okay?
No, it's her house, too, because she's married to Dave. So it's her house, too.
Well, it wasn't when they got married.
It doesn't make any difference, man. I mean, you've been married. Don't you understand the community property laws? It's half her house, at least for now, depending upon what their prenup is. You know,
well, that's the thing, and I asked her if she had a prenup, and she won't tell me that, because I could determine whether that house, do I talk to her, or do I talk to Dave? And I said, if I'm going to talk to your husband, Dave, do you have a prenup? We didn't have one, I know that, but this Dave that she's married to now has some money, and I would imagine if he was smart that he would have had her sign a prenup so she doesn't, you know, get all the money, but I don't know how smart the guy is, but... And
she doesn't have to let you talk to Dave, and Dave doesn't have to talk. You don't understand what I'm telling you here, man. She doesn't have to do any of that. It doesn't matter what's in their prenup.
You know, if that house isn't half hers, though, if he kept that house in a prenup, I have the right to know that.
No, you don't. No, you don't, man.
Well,
you do not have the right to know that. You don't have the right to know anything having to do with her or that man.
If I'm going to keep my furniture there...
She doesn't want your furniture there. She told you to get your furniture out of there. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Gary, you understand, man? That's the same thing I told her.
I understand that in this world that we live in, that women get everything in a divorce. I understand that. And
look, I don't want to debate with you, man, the relative fairness of the California divorce laws or any other divorce laws. I'm just telling you, man, that she doesn't have to do any of the things you're saying. And if you follow her into that gated community tonight to her condominium where she lives with her husband, you're going to be arrested.
No, I don't want to get arrested. I don't want to cause a problem. I just told the guy here, I said, all I want to do is follow her through if you leave the gate open, you know. And
have you checked? Has he checked your ID or your credentials or anything like that?
Yes, sir.
What did he say?
He said he'd let me in.
Well, then why hasn't he done it?
Because he's waiting for Tanya to come through.
And she's got to sign off on you, doesn't she?
No, she doesn't have to sign off on me, sir. I'm not sure he said that he's got to wait for her.
And he's going to ask her whether she wants you in that community or not.
Well.
That's what he might have checked your credentials, and you may be a nice guy, and you'd look okay to him. But he's not letting you in there, is he?
Not right now, but he's waiting for Tanya. She's going to sign off. All I want to do is talk to her for 2 minutes. That's all I want to do is talk to her for 2 minutes.
2 minutes? Talk to her outside the gates.
No, because I want to see if my furniture's okay. I have the right to see that.
She said she was going to put it out on the street, didn't she?
Yes, sir.
Did she say there was a time you could come and pick it up?
She's talking next week, but I don't know if her husband has already done damage to it or if it's still there, you know?
You could find that out next week.
I don't see how you, Mr.
You know, everything I'm saying to you, man, is falling. It's going in one ear and out the other, isn't it?
All I wanted to do, Mr. Henry, is talk to the woman for 2 minutes. And
everything I'm saying to you is going in one ear and it's flying out the other, isn't it?
No, sir, I'm listening to you.
You're listening to me?
Yes, sir.
And it doesn't register that you're not allowed in that community.
Yes, sir, it registers with me. I know that man has to approve of me coming through.
Okay, and if he doesn't, or if she doesn't...
Oh, he already approved me.
Okay, but if she doesn't...
You're talking about Tanya?
Yes, I'm talking about your ex-wife.
Well, that was a thing that I had told him. Okay, I said that she's my ex. She's still a member of my family, though, technically. And this gentleman here agreed with me. He said, I believe that that's true, you know, that ex-wives, ex-husbands should still be in families. So he agreed with me. And
oh, he's having some general conversation with you about the relative merits of family versus that's got nothing to do with the law. He's probably just being polite, you know?
No, he agreed with me. And I said, my ex-wife, I still consider her family. And he agreed with that. And I don't know if he agrees to the extent. I don't know if he has an ex-wife or anything.
He agreed to you. He was making polite conversation with you, okay? All right, look. I don't know if I'm getting anywhere. We got a couple of phone calls we're going to get to, and I want to give our number out, 877-876-7445. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time here with you, Gary, but I will tell you that if you are still there after, and I guarantee you they're not going to let you through, if your ex-wife is coming in and she's going to her home, I got a feeling she's not going to want you there, okay?
Well, I don't know, because my furniture's there.
She wants that stuff out of there. She gave you a date of next week to pick it up. Not tonight, and right now, it's late night. Is her husband home?
I don't know. I know that he works nights.
Okay, so that's another reason why they're not... She won't want you there, man.
I'm not going to hurt her enough, Mr. Henry. That's got nothing to do with what I'm saying. And
yeah, but you're not listening to me, man. You're not saying... You know, I'm telling you, you don't get to go in there and talk to her. She doesn't want your furniture there. Her husband doesn't want your furniture there.
And so the part about where I made partial payments on that car...
That has nothing to do with anything.
I don't... Mr. Henry, you know, I have not yelled at you. I have not raised my voice to you, sir.
I understand that.
I haven't shown any disrespect to you, and I... I don't know why you're showing me disrespect.
I'm sorry if I'm raising my voice. I'm frustrated because I'm saying some things that I have to tell you, Gary, most people would understand.
I do understand what you're saying. I do understand.
You understand, but you just don't agree. Is that it? You understand, but you just don't agree, right?
Not 100%, no, sir.
What part don't you agree with?
Well, I don't agree that I don't have the right to talk to her.
I said that she's going to have to approve of that, and I don't think she's going to let you.
Well, if she has my furniture...
She told you a date to come and pick it up, didn't she?
She did, sir, but I don't know what shape that furniture's going to be in. And then the other thing, too, is, like I said... the issue of the car, I know you disagree.
Boy, that's the one that I don't even get, man. The car is something that she owns. Hang on the line here, because we got to take a break. My tongue's dragging.
That guy is making a good point, though.
About what?
What point's he making? About the car, if he made partial payment.
Are you understanding, Bud, that when two people get divorced, there is a community property, there's a property settlement. Some people get some of it, the other people get the other thing, and that's where it's at. And the judge or the divorce arbitrator or mediator, whoever the hell they went to, made that decision. They said, okay, you get this and you get that, and that's the end of that, man.
And she got the car?
That's what he's claiming. And if she's got the car, he ain't got nothing to say about the car, no matter how many payments he made. 877-876-7445, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-7445, world famous Phil Hendry Show, and we're going to finish up with this gentleman here. We've got an eye on the Olympics, and we are going to talk a little Olympics next hour. Ted Bell is going to be with us from Ted's of Beverly Hills. Gary Rieger from Palm Desert, California, is on the line talking with us about about furniture that your ex-wife had in her garage that she's asked you to remove that you don't think you should have to remove, Gary, because you're a member of the family and she should give you consideration. This is one of the areas that we've disagreed with you on, being a member of the family. She's divorced you. Secondly, you're waiting around the entrance to her place to talk to her. And thirdly, you think you deserve the use of her car because you helped make payments on it. All of this adds up to, in the mind of a cop, somebody that is stalking?
No, sir. I'm not a stalker, and I understand people would consider that. And, you know, her mother said that about me. And I said to her mother, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. But her mother's been a big, big problem, I can tell you that.
Well, I'm sure she has been a big problem because she's probably told you a lot of the things that I'm telling you right now. Here is Ray on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Ray.
Hi, Gary.
Yes, sir.
Hello? Hi, how you doing?
Yes, sir. I'm good, thank you.
Well, I've been in that same situation you are in right now. And my best advice is to get your furniture next week, like she asked you.
Right.
And if you ain't got a place to put it, sell it. Buy you a new car, cut your losses, and move on, brother.
Well, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. All I wanted to do was to see if she'd keep the furniture there for another month or so.
See, she doesn't want to, man.
Yeah, but it sounds like she don't want to have no part with you. And it's just going to hurt you in the long run, brother.
I think that's her husband, though, that's influencing her that way, you know.
It doesn't matter who's influencing her. It doesn't matter if it's her, her husband, her mother. It doesn't make any difference.
It's just going to hurt you in the long run. Get your stuff. Get you a yard sale, sell it.
What about the car?
The car?
What about her car?
Cut the losses on the car. You lost the car.
Well, I made payments on that car.
It doesn't matter because...
Look,
I'm sorry.
The thing about it is...
Yes, sir.
You paid payments, yes. But the thing about it is the courts don't care.
Well, that's what I told this mediator. I said it to my way of thinking... They don't care at all about men, you know, and they give everything over to the lady.
The thing about what you need to do today, tonight.
Yes, sir.
Is go away from the home because she can get you for harassment, stalking,
right,
and all
right.
kind of other charges right now.
She's coming in right now. Hold on. Is that her? Yeah, that's her car right there, Mr. Hendry.
If I were you, don't even go up to the car.
I would leave.
Tanya? Hey, how you doing, Tanya? Hey, can I go in? Tanya? See, she just went in. She wouldn't even talk to me.
That's what I told you was going to happen, man.
Can I go in now?
I would cut my losses and leave, brother.
Let me go talk to her now. All right, that's against the law because she's got my furniture in there.
Not,
she has my furniture in there.
It's not against the law.
It's not against the law.
I'm a licensed
What's
security
going on?
Guard.
Stop talking about that, man.
What's he doing, Robert?
Hey, Gary, what are you doing?
She got my furniture in there, and I wanted to go in.
Is he talking to the security guard there?
Yeah. Hey, Gary.
Hold on for a minute, just a minute, Mr. Henry. I'm very sorry. My furniture's in there with my ex-wife and the man she's married to, huh? I know that. Well, first time. You didn't tell me nothing, man. You said...
He's going to call the cops on you, man. Do you understand that?
What's that, sir?
He's going to call the cops.
You're going to go to jail. He's got the right to call the cops right now and throw you in jail.
Well, how come I can't at least make sure my furniture hasn't been destroyed by this man she's living with?
Then next
That's her husband.
Next week, you come
All
back,
right.
and you
it's
see her and her husband,
yep.
and her husband. And you can bring the cops with you if you like to get your furniture.
I will do that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to get...
Do it the legal way.
If I'm going to get the Riverside Sheriff.
He can have you in a bind.
I'll get the Riverside County Sheriff out here, okay?
Good. Do that, man.
I'll get the Riverside County Sheriff out here. And
that
come
would
with
probably
me.
Be your best bet, brother.
Hold on. I'm leaving, man, but I'm going to come back with the Riverside County Sheriff.
Okay, you know, you're acting like, Gary?
Yes, sir.
You're acting really stupid now, man. You're just standing out there yelling at people.
Well, no, I'm just telling this gentleman at the gate.
He don't
that
care.
My furniture's in.
See, this man Ray is a security guy.
Are you a security guard, sir?
He don't care.
Are you a security?
Yes, sir.
Can you talk to this man for me?
Well,
I got
like
a man here who's a security guard.
The security guard is doing his job.
Hold on for a minute. Yes, hello?
I'm here.
Who's this?
Oh, hi.
This is Ray.
Hey, Ray, how you doing?
What is your name, sir?
Hi.
Oscar?
Your name's Oscar? Yeah, this is Ray. He's a security guy.
Do you know this guy? Do you know
no,
this guy?
No, I don't know
sir?
Him.
Oh, okay.
I'm just on the phone to try to help him with his situation.
Okay. I thought you did because he was standing here yelling at me, and I said, I can't let you in, you know.
We thought maybe you weren't going to let him in.
You're doing your job.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But what happened was this guy is... He's telling me this and that, and he said, you have to let me in. I said, no, I have to wait for Ms. Van Buren to come in, and then I will ask her. And if she wants you to come in, that's fine. If she doesn't want you to come in, I said, I can't let you in. And now he's causing a problem, you know.
Why don't you call the police?
I said to him I would call the police. Yeah, but
that's
all
what we're trying to tell him. Right now, you have legal rights to call the cops.
Well, you know
him.
Something? You know something? I'm trying to... Give this guy a break. You know, I want him to leave. I don't want to
understand
have to,
that.
Yeah, you know. And all I want to do is look at my furniture. I told you can't look at any furniture, sir, because it is the lady's house, you know. It's her house. I know that. And you can't look at any car. I can't let you in there. I know that.
Hey,
put him back
Gary.
On the phone.
Gary.
Yeah, here's the man.
Gary.
Yes, sir. This is Gary Reeder. Yes, sir.
Gary, look.
Yes, sir.
The guard is doing his job. He cannot let you in that gate. If you try to get in the gate, if you try to mess with him, he can legally throw you in jail tonight.
Yes, sir.
You don't want to spend a night in jail, do you?
No, sir. I'm going to come back. I'm going to come back with the Riverside County Sheriff and put her in jail.
You can't throw her in jail because you told her she hold your stuff, correct?
Yeah, I didn't give it to her, though, you know.
But legal
I'm
rights.
Leaving
well,
I'm leaving
well,
now. I'm leaving now.
Okay. Look, Ray, we've come to the end of the hour. Great job, Ray. I appreciate very, very much you talking to him. And, Gary, we thank you very much for calling us, you know.
I'm leaving right now. Are you the guy?
No, I'm not the guy.
Well, I'm going to have the cops call you and get after you. I'm leaving right now. I'm talking to Phil Hendry on his radio show, okay? You've been on national radio show.
Yeah, you've been on a national radio show. Phil Hendry, everybody who listens to him heard what you said.
Phil Hendry.
And then you'll see...